KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor this Monday's Clinton Street Resistance film, Les Miserables, on Monday, December 10th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. Les Miserables is a 2012 musical drama based on the 1862 French novel of the same name by Victor Hugo. The film takes place during early 19th century and tells the story of Jean Valjean, who, after breaking parole, agrees to care for a factory worker's daughter. The story reaches resolution against the background of the June Rebellion. The screening is a benefit for Oregon Walks. Again, that's Les Miserables on Monday, December 10th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6:01 p.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hey.
We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today on the phone is Rebecca Garelli. Hey, Rebecca.
Hey. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing great. We're happy to have you here. Why don't we start by just having you tell us about your teaching background and experience?
Sure. So this is actually my 15th year being an educator. I started back in 2004, and I was a Chicago public school teacher for about 11 years.
Well, that explains
and,
a lot.
Know, that's what most people say. So, yes, I was, you know, an active member of the Chicago Teachers Union. I was part of the 2012 teacher strike there. And then I left the classroom for 2 years, and I went to DePaul University, where I actually worked on an education grant and was a science instructional coach, helping Chicago Public Schools for 2 years. And then I decided to move my family out to Arizona, and this is my second year teaching out here.
Oh, okay. Wow, you got there just in time. So tell us a little bit about what inspired you to become a teacher and what you enjoy most about it now.
You know, obviously, like most teachers, what inspired me is just, you know, the innate ability to connect with kids, you know, so I just felt, you know, compelled to work with children, always had. I used to teach an after-school basketball program pretty much from my college job, so I worked, you know, basketball camps and clinics and things like that, and so I just realized, hey, I'm really good at explaining things to kids, and I love learning, so why don't I get into this? And so I did, and I found that I loved it. You know, what I most enjoy is I'm a science teacher, so, you know, there's a lot of things to enjoy about teaching kids about science, because who doesn't love science? And so I just love the wonderment and, you know, really having that opportunity to engage with them and explain incredibly hard concepts on such, you know, a simple level, because I teach middle school science. So it's just really enjoyable to take something so amazing like, you know, the solar system and break it down for the kids and really just engage in that learning together. I dig it.
Great. So, what's it like teaching in Arizona? What are some of the hardships facing educators there?
Well, that is quite a loaded question. there's actually quite a bit of hardships here. So, I guess I'll start by saying that it's definitely a lot different than, what I was used to in Chicago, meaning, just, you know, workplace conditions, resources, you know, respect for my contract hours, that kind of thing is a little bit different here. And as far as like statewide hardships facing all educators, if you look up any statistic in Arizona for education, you will see that we are at the bottom of the barrel for pretty much everything, including salary, we're 49th or 50th. Per pupil funding, we're pretty much last. Class size, we're last. student to counselor ratio. Our average here in Arizona is 903 to 1.
Whoa.
And currently my school is at 1900 to 1. So, you know, with that comes, you know, mental health issues and school safety. And, you know, that's such a big topic today and such an integral part of what we do that, you know, that is a hardship here, not having enough counselors to help the kids through traumatic situations, et cetera. So a lot of hardships here. There had been 2,000, last year there was 2,000 teaching vacancies, and this year we're still at 1,524.
Wow.
Because it's just a really challenging place to teach.
Yeah.
The respect is not there for what we do.
So can you lay out what's been happening for the last few years in Arizona as far as taxes, the budget, school funding, teacher pay, leading up to the walkout and strike last spring?
Yeah, most definitely. So again, I'm new to Arizona. I've only been here for a little bit less than 2 years, but what I have definitely, I mean, I did 2 years of research before I even moved out here, and mm-hmm. just by doing research on my own, you could tell since 2008 that, you know, in the name of austerity, that cuts, you know, budgets had just been slashed and slashed and slashed and continued to slash with, you know, rising healthcare costs, with stagnant pay, no cost of living increases. So basically, teachers that started 10 years ago are making less, if not the same as what they, you know, were making back in 2008. And so you hear about the recession and how cuts have, you know, been connected to that. And now that our you know, governor basically says that our economy is booming, it hasn't trickled down to, you know, the educators and the students. So we are still, we have about a one, it was last year before we went out on strike, we there was a $1.1 billion difference from 2008 to 2018 mm-hmm. in our education spending. So basically, we had, you know, when we started organizing, we asked for five demands. One of those demands, I mean, we didn't ask, but we demanded five mm-hmm. things. And one of them was to return the funding to 2008 levels. No more, no less, just put it back. Because budget cut after budget cut left a $1.1 billion difference in the funding for education. And so in Arizona, we don't love taxes here, right? That's Arizona's mm-hmm. Major platform of political organizing out here. And so it's really challenging to increase taxes here. There's a vehicle service fee that has been implemented, but that's pretty much it. There has not been one sole dedicated funding source for just K-12 education.
Gotcha. Well, so paying for schools and roads and things like that, that's not very Arizona friendly, huh?
It's not Arizona friendly right now. Yes, correct.
Well, that's too bad. So tell us, how did you first hear a talk about the possibility of a walkout or strike? I hear it called both things. I never know.
Right.
I haven't yet decided which. I tend to like the word strike more, but sometimes walkout sounds a little less scary to folks. But how did you first hear about that in Arizona?
Like the actual idea?
Yeah. How did it start getting talked about as a possibility? Obviously, there were a couple
sure.
other states that happened first, but were you already
exactly.
talking about it, or was it only after that?
So I had been on the Arizona BACT page, which mm-hmm. is a Facebook group, mm-hmm. and I had been posting things out of West Virginia. I had actually asked Jay O'Neill from West Virginia to let me into his Facebook page so mm-hmm. I could see what was going on. He allowed me to come in as long as I just kind of lingered in the background.
Nice.
So I was just kind of on his page, you know, just like watching how they organized, what their messaging was, and just wondering, you know, why isn't Arizona doing this? Why is nobody doing this? And then I saw Oklahoma walk out. I saw Kentucky organize, and I'm still going, okay, we're going to miss the boat. If we don't do this now, this you know, momentum is going to die. So
yeah.
Basically just organized our first Facebook page on a Friday night in March. And basically the minute that was March 2nd, a Friday night, I made mm-hmm. the first page called Arizona Teachers United. And within, by Sunday, we had over 2,000 members. And I'm pretty sure I saw the word strike on there
mm-hmm.
at least 15 times mm-hmm. over the weekend, where everyone goes, yes, we're striking, yes, we need this. And I went, whoa, wait a minute, hold on. we can't just walk out right now. We really need to, you know, we need to have conversations and build a plan, because I knew, you know, I had been through this before, and I know that you just don't pull the trigger and you just don't walk out. And so basically that the spark of the Facebook page just being created here, I mean, the word strike was on that page within an instant. And so basically what happened is by Sunday night, I got a little bit nervous that I was kind of in charge of this movement on my own, because I made the page on my own, that I said, you know what, I'm going to shut it down. We're not ready. We can't walk out right now. Like, that's not how you do this. And I shut the page down, and thankfully most people said, now wait a minute, we're in, we'll help you, you know, we need this, Arizona needs this. So we decided to spark a brand new page called Arizona Educators United, and decided to include not just teachers but everybody. So the word of strike was there since the page was created. People, I think, had been so incredibly angry that they were wanting this very badly and really wanted to fight for the schools, you know, our students deserve. So it was there since day one.
Wow. Okay. So how were decisions made about when to walk out and what demands to make and whether or not to settle?
Sure. So within our Facebook group, there were 9 of us that kind of sort of stepped up at the beginning and volunteered. So we became this like de facto leadership group that sort of steered the path and came up with ideas. And, you know, we had organizing calls and meetings and things like that, Facebook chats. And so we just kind of, you know, kind of the 9 of us decided roles. Like, I stepped up and I said, I'll be in charge of actions. I've been through a strike before. Mm-hmm. I think I have a pretty good idea of things we could do. Another one of our leaders stepped up to be the media spokesperson. We had another person that was in charge of, we actually built this liaison network. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but what we did is we asked people to step up and self-organize. So we made a Google form and we said we need at least one representative in every building across the state, so that we can, you know, disseminate information, communicate, build a communication structure. And we ended up by the end of our 8-week organizing blitz having 2,000 liaisons in over 1,200 schools statewide.
That's impressive.
So we basically, you know, we were sort of this leadership team, but we were continually asking, you know, all the members on our Facebook page to reach out to their members. We would call on our site reps or liaisons to communicate with within their buildings, within their sites locally, and then come back to us. So we had this sort of feedback loop where we could, you know, spread out some information, get some feedback, and then help that steer where we were going. So we really built this amazing, you know, we had like a Remind text system set up. We had Action Network emailing system set up. We had regular email. We had Facebook pages. We had every district make a Facebook page so they could organize locally. So we just kind of really just divided and conquered, basically, was the simple decision there. Well, I was going to say, as far as like demand to go, that's where our actual union came in. They were with us since day one. You know, we were really great partners. We had this parallel relationship where, you know, they knew it needed to be, you know, teacher driven, educator, grassroots, you know, kind of as the drivers of the bus, and they would provide us with support and facts and statistics. They helped us craft our demands. We had really great leadership meetings with them frequently about, you know, what tactic and what strategy and what were the outcomes. So we were in it together. We constantly communicated together and worked together as like a full leadership team, both the grassroots side and the official union side.
Gotcha.
And how involved was your state elected union leadership? So the state leadership.
So our state elected leadership, so our president of Arizona Education Association, was with us the entire time, incredibly involved. We had a joint leadership team with our members and their members, so we had a constant communication. And they, you know, we strategized together, we made decisions together, we did press conferences together, we did the rallies together. Everything was a joint effort with our elected union leadership.
Right.
Gotcha. When you think back to the demands, do you still feel like you chose the right demands, or do you feel like you were demanding too much or not enough? How do you feel about the demands that you chose back then?
I feel like they still hold true.
Mm-hmm.
And they're completely necessary because, you know, one demand was for teacher pay, which, you know, the dignity of our profession is there and we should be paid adequately. A second demand was restoring funding levels to 2008, and embedded within that is, you know, class size. We can lower the class size, we can add counselors. So I think, you know, that demand of just saying, listen, put the funding back to 2008 levels. We didn't even ask you for any more. Just put it back so that our students can succeed and our teachers can lead with dignity, right? And so I feel incredibly great about those two demands. We had another demand about, you know, our sisters and brothers who are our classified staff, who also, you know, deserve a livable wage and a competitive salary. That was one of our demands. They're an integral part of the whole school system. So I feel like that holds true. We yeah. also asked, or I keep saying asked, I'm going to change my tone to demanded.
Demanded.
We also said to, you know, we wanted a moratorium on tax cuts. Just mm-hmm. stop the tax cuts for corporations until funding is restored. Just stop. And clearly we did not see that. And clearly we think that's, a piece of the puzzle that needs to get fixed. And then a final demand is, here in Arizona, there's not an actual salary structure. So I'm talking about steps and lanes. So not only yearly increases, but also, you know, longevity increases for professional growth. Like you get a master's or a doctorate.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of places here, a lot of districts don't have that salary structure in place and actually remove those structures from 2008 and, you know, from this 10-year time period. So teachers have been working with no, you know, motivation, no incentive to continue in this work, and just really having stagnant wages with everything else increasing is just, it's demoralizing.
Mm-hmm.
So I do feel like our demands are still hold true, still worth fighting for, and still going to drive where this movement goes, you know, in the future.
Yes. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio, and we have Rebecca Garelli, a teacher from Arizona, formerly Chicago, transplant to Arizona. Thanks for being here. Rebecca, Rachel, why don't you go ahead and ask the next question? I was going to ask about students and families, but I'm looking at the time, and I want to get to some of this, you know, what's going on now. So.
Okay, yeah. So how have your feelings about your union changed at all since the statewide strike?
Absolutely. Mainly because when I first arrived in Arizona, and I started teaching my first year last year here, I was looking for the union because I'm used to, you know, traditional union organizing. I'm used to going to meetings. I'm used to being in the know. And when I got here, I went to my first union meeting, and it was not what I expected. I was a little bit disappointed in the tactics used to try to gain membership, one of which was trying to get people to sign on because of great car insurance. And I just threw my hands up in the air, and I said, you have got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. So I didn't join the union at first because I needed some time to understand what it was like to work in a right-to-work state.
Mm-hmm.
I needed some time to understand what organizing looked like here. And I actually did not join the union until March of last year, of this year, actually.
You decided you needed that car insurance deal after all.
Clearly why I joined. No, but so my feelings totally shifted when this movement was created because they were there. They supported us. They were with us 100%. It was a really wonderful relationship. It's still a wonderful relationship. And now I'm trying to get more people to organize and join the union. So I really feel like our union is an amazing union. It is, you know, listening to the members. It's listening to the base. It's trying to drive, you know, this organizing to where we really need to be. So my feelings definitely have changed.
Great. What's been going on in the state since the strike ended?
So after it ended, we immediately pivoted towards a ballot initiative called the Invest in Ed initiative, which I'm sure, yeah, you've probably heard about. So we had, 6 weeks to gather 270,000 signatures, 150,000 signatures. And it was basically, if you think about the quantitative data I've given you, it was $1.1 billion is what we were missing. Through our organizing, we gained $402 million of that back into the K-12 budget. So that means we had a gap of $700 million. The Invest in Ed ballot initiative would actually fill in that gap of $700 million through an increase in income tax on the top 1%. So we thought, here's our solution. The government wasn't going to do it. We'll find our own dedicated funding source. Created this ballot initiative. In 6 weeks, we got 270,000 signatures. So that liaison network we created was actually amazing and helped us mobilize and activate people to get out, to volunteer, to get their boots on the ground, to get out and get those signatures. And so we spent all of June to July 5th gathering signatures and turned those in. And then come August, the Supreme Court knocked it off the ballot. So the voters were robbed of their opportunity to actually vote on it. So we did that. And then when August hit, we were still waiting for the news on the ballot initiative. We turned and pivoted one more time to, you know, organizing for the primary election, which is a big deal out here. So we, you know, started getting volunteer groups, making sure that people knew how to plug themselves in. The union created tons and tons of events to plug people in across the state of how to organize and, you know, volunteer and canvas and that sort of thing. And that's what we've been doing since August till the election.
Gotcha.
Till November.
Yes. So really focused on that election.
Correct. Yes.
So is there talk about the possibility of another statewide strike or other sort of statewide kind of action like that this school year?
Well,
or is that hush-hush?
Off the table. There is no option off the table, right?
Mm-hmm.
We are going to continue to organize. We're going to continue to hold our elected accountable, you know, our elected officials accountable. And we're going to continue to build power locally at our site. And that's going to be both with our union, inside of the union, and, you know, we still have this grassroots movement that, you know, we're going to continue to try to steer it where we believe it needs to be, and that's to continue to fight for the five demands. So what that looks like may not, you know, be manifested yet. We haven't figured it all out, but as we go, no option is off the table.
So what lessons do you think educators in other states could learn from your experiences over the last year or so?
A significant lesson, I would say, is understanding the power of your collective voice. Right. Mm-hmm. Even in a right to work state where you think striking is illegal, the power of, you know, organizing massive amounts of people is the way to, one, gain public awareness, earn, you know, public support, and just tell the story. Teachers have a beautiful story to tell and a really harsh story to tell. Right. People don't understand, like, the woes of education. The education crisis is across our nation, right?
Yes.
So I think the big lesson is that if we tell our story and we educate the public, because we're educators and that's what we do best, that we can continue to educate our communities and use our collective power, use our collective voices to tell that story, that we will always gain public support and we can always fight for the schools our students deserve.
Did you feel like your students and families really got it last time, last spring when you went on strike? What was your sense when you, either during the strike or when you got back to school? Did you feel like, I mean, were they really behind you?
Personally, I felt like my students and families were behind us. I saw tons of Rent for Ed cards painted, you know, in the drop-off line. I saw, you know, parents and some neighbors out on the walk-in line with us. So I definitely saw a lot of support. We had, you know, different districts. I could see, you know, kids writing signs and chalk, you know, saying they love their teachers and that kind of thing. So I would say in the majority of districts, yes, everyone was with us. They were behind us. They understood that it was, you know, for the good of the community and that strong schools really make a strong state. So I think people understood once we educated them on, you know, people didn't know. People did not know that Arizona was last in funding. And the minute you have that one-on-one conversation with parents or communities and you give them the facts, their eyes are wide open going, oh my goodness, I had no idea. So it was a beautiful experience to really enlighten and engage in those conversations and really tell them what was going on. And of course they were supportive. They just needed that information.
Right.
So, yeah, I was wondering, when you talked about public shaping public awareness and developing support and telling your stories, what were the different ways that you did that? So you talked about one-on-one conversations, but did you hold, like, town halls or have social media campaigns, stuff like that?
Yeah, we spent 8 weeks on an organizing blitz, and we escalated our action. So we started with, you know, simple actions that anybody can do. Wear a red shirt on Wednesday. Take a picture, post it on social media. The next Wednesday, take a picture with a sign for three reasons why you're red for Ed. Tell your story. What's your personal struggle? Post those on social media. Those were flooding in like crazy. Mm-hmm. Then we had our first protest, right? So we gained some media attention where we protested outside of a radio station where the governor did his monthly, you know, talk radio show. So we told the story, and people are going, why are you protesting the governor? Well, let me tell you why. Here you go. Here's my opportunity to engage in that conversation. So we did that. We did a teach-in down at the Capitol where we had the opportunity to tell our stories. And, you know, a lot of people, we had a lot of speakers with different experiences and backgrounds. We had about 6,000 people there, so we were continually on the media. And then we took the whole month of April to we called it Community Solidarity Month, where we asked people to organize locally at a park or a recreation site, doesn't matter where you are, get together, make some posters, because we're going to need them in the future. Get together with your red shirts, make some informational picketing handouts like palm cards and that kind of thing. And then we asked people to buy window markers and paint their cars red for Ed. So we called it Paint the State. So for a month, we basically got out in our communities, invited people to come, painted people's cars with window markers, you know, hashtag red for Ed. And by the end of it, we had cars with funding graphs on them, telling political information. You know, as you're driving down the highway, you look over, you see an Arizona funding graph. You're just like, what is happening? But those are the creative ways that we actually, you know, if you're at a park and you're organizing with a bunch of people in red shirts, the community starts asking questions. Hey, who are you guys? What are you doing? And it opens that opportunity to engage. So we did that, and then we spent 3 weeks on walk-ins. So we asked people to do walk-ins at all of their sites, but to clock attendance. So we gave them, like, a link to sign on to. So we could track how many actual sites. And through that, I mean, that's your opportunity to talk to your parents, community members, faculty members, anybody that comes to that school. If they see a bunch of people on doing a walk-in, they're going to ask questions, and that opens up that opportunity for you to engage in that one-on-one conversation and say, here's some information. Would you like to see what we're out here for? And so we really just, you know, we canvassed businesses. We asked them to put up red for Ed signs. And so wherever you went, the visual presence was there.
Wow.
You could see the community supporting, you know, across the state. This is really powerful.
Those are some really great tips and very helpful for us as we organize here in Oregon. I want to thank you so much for joining us on KBOO. It was really great to hear your story.
Yeah, thanks, Rebecca. It was fantastic.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
And thanks to our engineer. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes, and you've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 o'clock to catch another Labor Radio show. Good night.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
So this is Christmas.
On Monday, December 24th, Prison Pipeline hosts will feature your holiday messages to your loved ones in prison, as well as greetings from prisoners for those on the outside. Email your message to kbooppc@gmail.com or snail mail your holiday message to KBOO, Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Then tune in on Monday, December 24th at 6:30 p.m. Again, that's kbooppc@gmail.com or mail KBOO Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And happy holidays from the Prison Pipeline Collective every Monday evening at 6:30 p.m.
Yo.
Yo. KBOO is excited to be part of the 2018 Willamette Week Give Guide. This year, Willamette Week and KBOO are challenging our community to give with their dollars and take action by showing up in real life. KBOO has been showing up for over 50 years. Give to KBOO today and you get full access to the Chinook Book app, plus freebies from Laughing Planet, Gluten Free Gem, We Press, and Nosa Familia Coffee. You can contribute right now at kboo.fm/give or call 503-231-8032. Support KBOO, where music makes the movement.
Yo.